the 26th episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast, and in this episode we're going to interview Zane Swofford about how he failed to make any money from writing software for Ubuntu. And we've also got another time saving tip, and we'll read your feedback out into our microphones. If you're listening live or indeed watching live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this evening are the devilish duo that are Mr. Mark Johnson.
Hello, Tony.
And Mr. Alan Pope.
Hello.
How are you doing, gents?
All right.
Yeah, not bad.
Good.
Not bad.
Good, good, good. How are you, Mark? What have you been up to? Been doing anything interesting?
Oh, dear. Put me on the spot there, Tony.
Ask every week.
Yes. I bought an Arduino, which hasn't arrived yet. I can't remember whether it was an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter for a $9 Arduino starter kit.
Oh, yes.
Which includes an Arduino-compatible board and a whole load of electronic components and a breadboard and stuff, so that you can sort of get started straight away without having to go down to Maplin's and buy a big bag of bits.
Right. And have you got started straight away?
No, because they're still making them. But okay. Yes, it cost me $12 with postage, which I thought was good. And the chip he's using, apparently there are 12,000 on the market, and he didn't want to buy all of them and completely, kill the supply.
Yeah.
So he decided he was only going to make 8,000 boards. So there was, and they all went in the crowdfunding campaign, and he made, I think, 1,000% of his goal.
That's pretty good going. Ubuntu could learn a few things from that. Just saying.
Yes, if Ubuntu sold Arduinos instead of phones.
Yeah. Of course, tomorrow we'll find out how the campaign does in its final total.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yes, because it's next week, remember.
Ah, yes. Yes. Right, I see. See what you did there, Tony.
Seamless. Alan, how about you? What have you been up to?
I've been looking at ways to secure my communication.
Really?
Yeah.
Says the man holding an iPhone.
Yes. Hey. Thanks, mate.
What have you been trying?
I have tried, I've been using a tool to enable GPG encryption of email in webmail, mm-hmm. Because it's very easy to do with things like Mutt and Thunderbird, but it's a little bit more tricky in Gmail and some other webmail systems, and I wanted to be able to enable GPG encryption and signing of my emails.
Ah, cool.
So I used something called Mailvelope.
Right.
Which is an extension you put in your browser, and it just when you're typing in an email, you get a little hovering button, and if you want to encrypt the mail, you just tap that button and it flips to a UI where you can put in your necessary key details, mm-hmm. and so on. That's pretty cool. I've also been playing with something called BitMessage.
Ah, I had a quick look at that today.
Ah, I remember AdminJS, who's listening live in the IRC channel, mentioning that a little earlier. So he's recommending that too.
There we go. BitMessage is kind of loosely based on Bitcoin, kind of the way... I don't know how that works. It's like some computation that has to be done to prove the message before it's sent. And yeah, it's very difficult. But the easier one to set up, I found, was one called TorChat.
Right.
Which is a little chat system that lets you send secure messages to people over the Tor network. And it's pretty easy. It's in the repository. Apt-get install TorChat. Open it up. And you get a little chat window. And then you give someone your ID over some secure channel, mm-hmm. and then from that point onwards your communication is pretty secure. It's pretty cool.
Brill. Excellent.
What about you, Tony? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been pimping my Malawi charity fundraising.
Wow, have you? Yes.
On Twitter. And thanks to that, I've raised 25% of my goal, just over.
Oh, Ubuntu could learn something from that.
They did, yes.
And maybe they should give away some Doctor Who tickets to a lucky benefactor.
Yes, I ran a competition for some tickets to Doctor Who, and genuinely, the random.org website picked Alan as the winner, which has saved me the price of a first-class stamp, seeing as he's here.
No, I want you to post it to me.
I might just do that, which is all well and good. So, yeah, thank you very much indeed for everybody who supported and sponsored that. Still a way to go, so, keep on giving. We'll put a link in the show notes, I'm sure. But, yeah, thank you very much. Should we get on with it?
Yes.
Thank you.
On the line we have Zane Swafford. Hi, Zane. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine here, Alan. You?
Great. I'm doing very well. You've recently posted a few blog posts after some development work that you did. Can you tell us a little bit about the app and what it does?
Yeah, so the app's name is Spindle. It helps you track your time. If you're familiar with the application Hamster for the Linux desktop, it's similar to that. The one thing that I tried to focus on was making the really pretty graphs and, you know, integrating into Unity really nice.
And what made you decide to create such an application?
Well, it was really just out of personal need. I just needed a way to track my time, and I kind of got a little fed up with Hamster after realizing you had to install something separate to get it to run in the little notification center. And I just really, I mean, it's a nice app, but it didn't really fit my needs. So I went ahead and made Spindle and then decided I'd go ahead and release it.
And when you released it, was it open source, Floss license, or proprietary? I'm leading up to something here.
Oh, yes, yes. It's BSD licensed, so anyone can go see the code and do what they want with it. That's just something I thought, you know, I would want from an application.
Okay, but you put it in the Ubuntu Software Center?
Yes.
Tell us about that experience.
So all in all, it was pretty nice. Getting it through the review process was pretty quick, 2 weeks. I know if I would have went to most other application stores, won't name names, but the average is about a month. So it was a pretty speedy process. There were a couple of people from Canonical along the way. If I would have had questions, could have asked. But all in all, yeah, the process was pretty smooth getting it up there.
And was it just a case of uploading a tarball and putting some graphics in, and that was about it, and you were in the store?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. You just got to put a tarball together. The only thing that I would was a little confused about is, so there's not really a proper way to test it, and I guess technically in other app stores there's really not this either, where you could test pull it down, because they do remain, or they do retain the right, rather, to change it just to make it work. For example, since it's just a tarball that extracts to your /op directory, they could change some things to make it work. But all in all, it worked out okay.
You mean that you don't, until it's actually live and on the store, you don't get to like do a test install of it to make sure it's doing what you think it's doing?
Well, I can do some testing, but if they would change anything,
yeah,
I'm not sure how I would know or test against that.
Oh, so there isn't like a build put up before it goes live in the store that you can then download and verify?
Yeah, there's not really a process for that. But I guess in comparison to the alternative being something similar to what you might see in the Mac or iOS app store would be they just reject it. It's a little more polite.
Right. So, and what did you set the price point for the app? And how long was it in there? And did you generate any sales? And are you now a millionaire?
Well, I'll start with the last one. No. Just because that's the quickest. But it's $2.99. It's their minimum price. Well, $2.99 American.
Right.
I'm not sure what that is in pounds.
Is that a price that you were thinking of? Or is that, you know, just the minimum and that's what you wanted to put it at?
Well, honestly, I was thinking about $5, but then I just looked into it, did some testing, and I found that apparently that's just unreasonable to charge the same amount as you would for a cup of coffee for software.
Right.
Yeah. I just went ahead and said, fine, the $2.99, the minimum, which I will point out, I'm really glad that's the minimum.
Why? What makes you say that?
Well, I think I personally kind of think that the whole idea of pushing everyone to make a 99-cent app has just kind of commoditized software as a whole. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice that people can afford, you know, to buy 50 applications for their smartphone to carry in their pocket, but the quality of those applications might come into question, I think. Try to remember probably 2005, 2006, before we really had any major app center, not just on Ubuntu, but in general.
Right.
It wasn't uncommon to see software for $50, something like that. And now if you try to charge something for, like, you know, that's preposterous. I don't know how you would ever get away with that.
It's interesting because I've seen a counter argument that that $299 is too high, that people want to be able to sell very small utility apps, like, for example, you know, the Minecraft launcher, or, you know, something really lightweight that probably took the developer no more than a day or two to create, and they want to sell it at a really low price point, and the $299 is too high for that. It's interesting to hear the counterpoint that it's too high for your kind of application.
Well, essentially, like, the Minecraft launcher is a really good example. If that developer, which I think I actually had asked him a couple questions, I'm not sure. There was a couple Minecraft launcher apps on there. If they felt that it was probably worth less than $299, my personal opinion is that you should just release it as free. If I think that's just a fair minimum point. I mean, if you're going to invest even a day's work into it, you should think about getting a little something back out of it, because I don't think, at least for myself and the statistics I've seen for other people, I don't think 99 cents is even logical on the Ubuntu Software Center.
So having had your application approved for $299 into the Ubuntu Software Center, this is the bit where you just sit back and count the money as it comes in?
Not exactly.
Okay, what happened? How did it go?
Well, I put it up there, and I had initially set out a goal to just see if I get $100. That was my initial investment between AdWords and paying a designer to do the pretty icon.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't quite make that in the first 30 days of having it up there, which I could accept. But essentially, as soon as I launched it, for at least the first week, I tried to push it as much as I could without becoming a used car salesman.
Used software salesman.
Buy now, Windows 3.1.
At least you're not going for 32 million.
Oh dear, don't start down that road.
Okay, yeah. No, that's all right. Uncle Mark will write the check, right?
So anyway, back to your story.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't make that, but I personally think it's just because I did run out of time to keep promoting it. But outside of that, I have been taking some support questions. Since my project's up on GitHub, people have been making feature requests, which I'm really a fan of. I really like the idea of other people giving me feedback and getting their opinions in there for version 2.
Mm-hmm. So given that the software is BSD licensed and on GitHub as well as being for sale in the Software Center, did you find that there was an increase in people downloading it, like, outside of the Software Center while it was on sale instead of buying it?
I actually can't track, as far as I know, if that happens, and I really wouldn't care if it did. Essentially, one reason, pretty much the main reason why I charged money, I'm not really hoping to pay my rent with this money.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that it adds value to the software. I know that's kind of a corny thing to say, but if you pay for something, you do have to make a little bit of a physical investment.
Yeah.
And if you're willing to put in enough time to download the tarball from GitHub, extract it to your /opt, chmod the binary, and do everything you need to do to get it up and running, then I'd say you've made the time investment. And as far as I'm concerned, you've earned it. Go ahead, take it. Of course, I'd be happy if you bought it. But either way, the biggest problem, and I know that this is not a very popular opinion, but free users are not the best users.
What makes you say that?
Yeah, so essentially, one thing that I've kind of noticed, and, you know, I've been a victim of this myself, is that if there's a lot of free apps or something like that, for example, take the Android App Store. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll just download apps, look at it for 5 seconds, and then I'll probably uninstall it by the end of the day. That software really holds no meaning with me. Versus what I want to do is hopefully have something that someone either puts money or time into getting, and the software means something. It's not just disposable, you know?
So you're engaged users.
Yeah.
Rather than just customers.
And essentially, I'd like to get feedback, but I know, at least from what I've observed, that users, especially free users, will give reviews such as doesn't work, 0 out of 1, or 0 out of 5 stars.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. But especially what I've started noticing is I've had a lot of users, which I think it's awesome that people actually go to the GitHub page, leave feedback if something wouldn't work. For example, I did correspond via email with someone who was having an issue. They were willing to show me the terminal output of it, mm-hmm. or they wanted a feature and they were willing to describe it in detail, how they would like it. And that's the kind of interactions I'd like to have. Essentially, I'm writing software for a niche community.
Yeah.
So I'd really, you know, why not just go all in on that? Make niche software, be happy with it.
So do you also find it, as well as affecting the motivation of your users, do you find it affects your motivation as a developer working on the software if there's money associated with it?
Very much so, yeah. The money, not so much, just yeah. because I don't really look at it too much, really. But having the users there kind of mentally forces me to do something about mm-hmm. it. If I would have released this app for free, right now is kind of a busy time for me, and I probably would have just, you know, said forget it, mm-hmm. and I'd probably never touch Spindle again.
Right.
But since I do have that I don't want to say that I'm like huge or anything. I don't have like some amazing community, but I have a couple of people that I correspond with over it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I owe it to them to continue to make this and try to make it better and make something better for them and hopefully bring in more people.
What lessons have you learned from the whole project? What do you think that you could pass on to other developers? What do you think is useful information specifically around about developing paid apps for Ubuntu?
Yeah. Essentially, don't try to make it up on.
Essentially, don't. Excellent.
Don't try to make it up on volume.
Right. Okay.
Just acknowledge that you're developing niche software, and there are going to be a lot of people who expect free applications. That's mm-hmm. just the world we've kind of come on. Not really any one developer's fault. Maybe just the ecosystem as a whole. You know, apps becoming 99 cents are free. But, you know, just acknowledge that software is your time and you deserve just a little bit of kickback from that. And that, yeah, don't worry about making it up on sales. Just worry about maybe getting a little bit of a price point. But definitely don't try to pay your rent with the Software Center.
Is there anything which you think that Canonical and the Ubuntu project could do to make the paid apps ecosystem better?
They could rebuild the Software Center.
What you mean, as the application for
yes.
for buying apps?
Yes, that would. If I got appointed by Mark today, and he's just like, okay, go fix this. That would be the first thing I would do. Is because I don't know many other people's opinion on it, but I know personally that I find it pretty much awful to buy anything from, and half the time it does not work from that application.
So is that the buying process, the searching for applications process, or just the whole thing?
Whole thing entirely. Searching for applications is slow. Launching the Software Center is slow. Putting in your credit card info is something you have to do almost every time. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who work very hard on it, and I don't want to put any disrespect towards them.
Sure.
But the application as itself is, well, there's no need to lie about it. It's terrible.
That's interesting feedback. That's exactly why we got you on.
I agree that it's very slow, certainly. I've never tried to buy anything through it, so I can't speak to the rest of the experience, but it is very slow.
And I personally feel like it should be no harder than it is to buy something from Amazon or the iTunes App Store. And I don't know if you've used either of those services, but it's almost easier to accidentally buy something than it is to...
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, I've done that.
Which, I mean, I don't want that to happen to people because that's not fair. But I'd like it to be a little easier process. And mm-hmm. then on top of that, I think they should... Another unpopular opinion. I know I'm just kind of full of those.
Go for it.
I think they should be a little more restrictive of what they get in there, right?
What they're selling, you mean?
What should be curated?
Well, essentially, ideally, they should, you know, have design standards, you know, speed response standards, say, this application crashes, or this application looks like it was written with Java Swing. You know, I mean, I know there are a lot of people who make a lot of great Java applications, but, you know, and I think now that they're picking the Qt, QML, Qt Quick base, mm-hmm. that if they would just say, okay, from this point on, if your application is paid and it's not made with this, we're not approving it. That would be so unpopular, but that would be definitely what they need.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's certainly an interesting point of view. I can see how someone coming from another platform where there is a store that is curated would come to this and think it is very much like the Wild West.
Well, I mean, I'm not really coming from another platform. I've been using Ubuntu for most of the time that I've been using a computer. It's just I've kind of seen what other people are doing, and I think, you know, I mean, we have the Wild West of Android, which is slowly becoming a little more cleaned up. Mm-hmm. And then we have the other extreme, you know, the North Korea of Apple.
Nobody gets out of this life tonight, do they?
Yeah. No. And, you know, neither one is the right answer, but maybe somewhere in the middle would be nice.
Sounds fair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would like to say we're fixing all of this with Ubuntu Touch, but we'll wait and see. thank you, Zane, so much for coming on. If people want to read more of your writings, where can they go?
You can just go to my blog at zaneswafford.com.
Magic. Thanks very much for coming on, Zane.
Yeah, no problem at all, Alan.
Cheers.
Cheers, Zane.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Command line love. Nice.
Excellent. Disturbing.
And the command line love time saving tip of the week is Up Records, which is part of the Uptime D package.
Yeah.
It doesn't really save you any time.
Well, what does it do?
It tells you about time.
Ah.
Yes. I like this. It's not really super useful, but as someone who likes stats and graphs and stuff,
right,
it's good. So you install Uptime D.
Yes.
And then once you've installed Uptime D, it keeps track of your system uptime.
Sounds valuable.
And every time you run the command UpRecords, yes, it reports the last, the top 10 uptimes you've ever had since you installed Uptime D.
Okay.
And then your percentage uptime, number, amount of time your system's been up, amount of time your system's been down. So it's actually quite a nice little reporting tool if you put it on servers, for example.
Yes, okay.
To report your uptime. So, you know, but the other nice thing about the top 10 list is it prints the kernel release next to each one, the kernel you were running when you had your highest uptime. So, you know, you can boast about, you know, when I was on kernel 2.6 whatever, right, I had an uptime of 500 days or something like that.
Right. Right. Or you can prove that you only reboot when the kernel changes or something.
Yeah, partly. So I ran this on, I installed this on my VPS, I think, back in 2007, and I've been running it ever since.
Okay.
And so I think there's a little bug in it because it says that it's been up for 2,844 days.
Right.
It's been down for 540 days. No, down for minus 540 days. And good, my percentage uptime is 123%.
And which I think there might be a bug.
I've yet to report that yet. But I think it's pretty spectacular, right, uptime. Well, Thank you, Bitfolk.
Yeah. Well, it does save you a lot of time, Alan, and I'll tell you how. Because if you wanted to know the last 10 uptimes of your system, it saves you all the time you would spend grepping your logs for boot messages, trying to work out when they were, when they were last modified and stuff. Mm. Or writing your own system to tell you this information, which would take up a lot of time.
Nicely dug there, yep. Tony. Thank you very much.
Good. Yes. Call on me. That's the end of the command line love. We'll be right back. inbox is bulging with your feedback, so we're going to start working our way through some of it right now. And the first one is from Anirban Chatterjee, who's emailed us from Calcutta, which is Calcutta in India, to say...
Not many people here are actually into podcasts, usually preferring the radio, but I've convinced a few of my fellow countrymen to listen to the Ubuntu UK podcast. The penetration of Linux here in India is rather shallow. The government has devised BOSS, Bharat Operating System Solutions, a custom Debian-based distro with versatile support for most Indian languages. That alone is perhaps the biggest reason for which Ubuntu and other distros are finally making their way into rural India, although English-educated urban guys are still reluctant to leave their beloved Windows 7 systems. Indian language computing is a big deal for thousands of programmers and users in rural India. The Digital eCourts project, initiated by the Indian judiciary, has finally decided to switch to the customized versions of Ubuntu from the previously used RHEL distros.
Ooh.
Yes. We're trying to popularize Ubuntu here, although I must say people seem to prefer Metro to Unity. What? And GNOME 3 simply scares them. But I hope this will improve with time. Already there are tiny but thriving locos around here, especially centered around metropolitan cities such as Mumbai, Kolkata and Delhi. And especially in the south, there are many who are ready to die for Ubuntu. I wouldn't go that
crikey.
Far.
Crikey. Yeah. Yes.
I like it, I know, but yes. Oh, yeah. Thanks very much for that.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
It's good to hear about the success we're having in various parts of the world.
Yeah, and good luck with those locos. And if you're involved in any of those locos, send us an email and perhaps we can read out your emails as well. Mm. So Derek Theophile has emailed in with the partitioning problem.
I blew away my Windows partition, which I hardly used anyway, and have gone Linux Mint 15 Cinnamon all the way. The problem is,
sort of.
The problem is that a window pops up saying the root file system has only 24.1 megabytes disk space remaining. I can't see why my file system is full. I don't save anything to root; it's all saved on my home partition.
Hmm.
Ask Tony.
Well, whilst we can't help with the detail of the technical problem here, and it's probably best pasted to somewhere like Ask Ubuntu or the Ubuntu forums,
or
to get
perhaps
some...
the Linux Mint forums in this case.
Yeah, sorry, the Linux.
Burn.
Is there Ask Mint? Is that a thing? I don't. Does it exist?
They have their own support infrastructure, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, firstly, go and use that. No, but secondly, there are some good applications out there that can show you what is using up your disk space. There's one that's bundled with Ubuntu and hopefully therefore available on Mint as well, which I think is called Disk Usage Map.
Analyzer.
Disk Usage Analyzer, is it?
Yeah, the package name is Baobab.
Yes.
B-A-O-B-A-B. B-A-O-B-A-B. It's the name of a tree.
And that shows you a big sort of weird graphy thing that that indicates where your files are and where the big ones are and which ones you can perhaps delete to create some space easily.
Yes, I use that all the time, actually. It's really useful because I've got an SSD in my laptop, so I'm forever running low on space. It's not a very big one. And I run Baobab or Disk Usage, whatever it's called, in the menu. Yeah. But I like saying Baobab.
There's an equivalent one called FileLite as well for KDE, which does a good job of that.
Yeah.
In fact, it used to be built into Conqueror as well, along with everything else.
So basically our advice, if I'm reading it correctly, is randomly delete things from your root partition.
Do not do that. Space.
That's not our advice.
Excellent. Nathan emailed to ask,
which version of your podcast is better quality, OGG or MP3?
Yes.
Neither. Is the answer. Technically, the MP3 is a higher bit rate than the OGG version, but actually we kind of encode them so they sound the same. The OGG files tend to be smaller, but they're slightly better.
OGG can give you better quality at a lower bit rate, so
indeed,
that's why that's the case. That's why OGG is good.
Yes.
Well, it's one of the many reasons why OGG is good.
Absolutely.
But yeah, whichever one you think sounds best, that's the best one.
Yes.
And whichever one plays on the device you want to play it on.
And whichever one respects your freedom.
Oh.
Andreas Abendroth emailed from Chemnitz, Germany? Chemnitz? I don't know. I'm not German. I'm sorry.
In recent episodes, you discussed the difficulties in giving precise specifications at the time you record the podcast live, such things as UTC and GMT. Why don't you use the Julian day?
Great idea.
Not to be confused with the Julian calendar.
Oh.
It specifies a precise and unique specification of time, and nobody can be confused with summer or winter time. I enjoy your show, and it helped and helps me to improve my skills in understanding spoken English.
Oh dear.
Very sorry about that.
It does worry me that someone might be learning English from us.
Indeed. But that's an interesting suggestion. Maybe we have to go away and look up what Julian days
are. It's basically days counted from a particular day in like 4000 BC. It's like Unix time, but for days.
Right. So it counts from when the world was created, right?
Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, if you believe those books. Okay. And we'll get emails about that. Thank you very much indeed for all of your feedback.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that entertains, engages, or enrages you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message, just to know there's someone out there who cares.
AdminJS in IRC, who's listening live, has just told me it's pronounced Chemnitz.
Ah, thank you, AdminJS, and your extensive knowledge of German geography. But that is all for this episode. So join us on Wednesday, the 28th of August. That's Julian Day number 2,456,533 at 19:30 UTC for our next live episode.
That's 8:30 in the evening for those listening in the UK.
And are we going to do this video thing again?
We'll see what the feedback is, but I think it's gone okay. Mark ate some cake on camera and got it in his beard, but apart from that, it all went very well. But thanks for listening and thanks for watching. See you next time.
Bye-bye.